Committee on Energy will come to order. It is now about 3:02, somewhere around there, Thursday, March 31st, 2011. And this is the 73rd day of the legislative session, so only 16 more days after this. Here in the Ramona Barnes Committee Room of the Capitol, which is room 24, is where our meeting is being held today. Present, we have Representative Lynn, Representative Peterson, Representative Olson, and myself, Representative Pruitt. I expect to see one or two of the others come here probably shortly. We do, though, have a quorum to conduct business. I would ask everyone to make sure that you have your phones on mute, vibrate, something to that effect, possibly off, and we'll try not to disturb the speakers today. Today, I'm actually really excited about what we have today, and let the record reflect that Co-Chair Representative Foster, as well as Representative Tuck, have both arrived. Today, we get the opportunity to hear about the Alaska Propane Project by the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. And I'm really excited about this because I think there's a lot of opportunities with propane throughout the state, as well as the and I think the transportation aspect is a key part of it that we're going to that we have to kind of bridge that hurdle so that we can bring cost-effective energy to some of the rural areas. Let the record reflect that Representative Sadler is here and that he chooses respect. I'm glad you were able to join the rally there today. So this is actually taking place at the same time that the Alaska North Slope Propane Conference is taking place in Anchorage. They are supposed to be meeting today as well as tomorrow, and it's sponsored by ANGDA. I think everyone here understands that ANGDA is a corporation that was founded by the people of Alaska through initiative, and we have very much a stake in the success or the goings-on of that corporation. You each should also have a copy of the agenda that's going to be taking place at that conference there in your packets. So joining us from Anchorage, we have Harold Hines, who is the Chief Executive Officer of ANGDA, and we also have two consultants, one that is in Anchorage, Marianne Pease, as well as we have Paul Furst here in Juneau. And I welcome all of you for being here. What I would like to do is start off with Mr. Hines. And if you would, Harold, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Well, let me start with, Mr. Chairman, first of all, can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay, good. Well, for the record, my name is Harold Hines. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority, ANGDA. And I'm actually calling in on a long string from Texas, where I had some family issues that have me there. I am missing both the hearing in the sense of being physically there. I wish I could be. And I'm also missing our propane conference in Anchorage. But as we will explain, there are capable people handling that. If it's all right, Mr. Chairman, I would just like to kind of introduce broadly the topic and then turn it over to both Marianne Pease and Paul Fuse to kind of go through the major piece of this puzzle. But if that's okay, Mr. Chairman?
That sounds great.
All right. Thank you very much for this opportunity, Mr. Chairman. Frankly, in this session, ANGDA, other than a limited performance and appearance before the House Finance Subcommittee, hasn't had much of a chance to talk a little bit about what's going on. And it is important that we be able to convey to you and the citizens of Alaska what we're doing. ANGDA, as you pointed out, is a public corporation formed through the initiative process in the 2002 election. Since then, ANGDA has worked on a fairly wide variety of things consistent with our mission of getting North Slope gas to market and doing it in a way that benefits Alaskans. And that benefits Alaskans is the key piece of the puzzle from our point of view. Over the years, that's taken a number of different forms. More recently, as frankly our resources have become fairly limited, we have focused down on two things that we consider to be of the prime importance, prime impact, and for the citizens of Alaska. The first of these is that we have participated on behalf of the electric utilities of Alaska in the open season process of both big pipeline projects, both Denali Pipeline and the Alaska Pipeline Project. That's important in terms of just working with the electric utilities, participating in that open season process, has put us in a position for many of the electrical customers in the state to enjoy the benefits of a very bargain, discounted, reduced transmission cost of North Slope gas when those pipelines are built, or when the pipeline is built. The important thing there is that that will affect anywhere from about two-thirds to up to even 75% of Alaskans and the cost of their electricity. The other big thing we focused on is propane. And along with the huge amount of gas on the North Slope, there is also a world-class resource in terms of the propane, which is a slightly heavier gas molecule that is also associated with the reserves on the North Slope. And in this context, that propane is going to reach probably at least a third of Alaska that will never see anything related to the pipeline directly. And by working on these two issues together, we believe we very favorably can impact the consumers of Alaska 100% and let them share in the benefits of the richness of the North Slope. And probably the only other real observation I want to make to get this kind of started is one of the things and one of the reasons we focus down on these two concepts of trying to develop a wholesale propane facility on the North Slope and also very actively participating and negotiating as part of the big pipeline process is that even if those things don't work out directly, even if we don't know exactly what the pipeline project that may tap into the North Slope looks like, both of these ideas and both of the things we're working on fit with whatever happens, whether it's a spur line or a bullet line or whatever. And that's the approach we've tried to take, is that we know at this point that there is a certain amount of uncertainty as to when and how exactly North Slope gas is going to be tapped. But we believe it's worth pursuing these two ideas, and that is our focus. And I guess the rest of this, what we'd like to focus on is the concept of propane and what it can mean to Alaska. And again, to kind of put it in context, the North Slope resource of both natural gas and its gas liquids, in this case propane, are far bigger than Alaska itself can ever use. At least 10 to 20 times bigger than Alaska itself can use. And so what that means in both the case of in-state gas and propane is that without some look beyond the state of Alaska, it's very hard to achieve the economies of scale. And in particular, that's where we've struggled quite a bit on the propane project. In the earliest parts, when we looked at this going back over 2 years ago, we worked on the concepts of trying to build a small facility on the North Slope. And while we felt we could do it economically, the economics were not nearly as robust enough as would be required for somebody to take that kind of a investment risk. But we think we have concepts now where, working with the Prudhoe Bay unit owners, we should be able to better accomplish this. And it also relates to the fact that we see opportunities not only for in-state use, but for export that will provide the economies of scale. And so, having said that, if you have any questions, I'd like to answer them at this point. But mainly, I would like to turn it over to Mary Ann Pease and then Paul Fuse. Mary Ann has worked on this project from the very beginning. Some refer to her as the propane queen, and she certainly deserves that title. She has been the driver behind all this, this conference, the whole building of a consortium of people interested in propane in the state of Alaska. So she's going to tell you a lot about that side of the project and the supply and just sort of see how we see this all coming together. On the other side of it, last year we had an opportunity to hire Paul Fuse as one of our contractors, and he did a fair amount of work looking at the logistical issues related to propane. Because, again, it's not only the cost of actually buying the propane molecules and separating them, it's also the cost of delivering them that will determine whether this energy source is a bargain or has a high value to the consumer. So both of them, I believe, have presentations for you today. And if you have no questions, I'll turn it over to them. Or if you have some questions, I prefer to take them now in case I run out of battery down here.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hines. Are there any questions from the committee? Or looks like we will go ahead and ask Mary Ann Peace to join us on the line. Mary Ann, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, and thank you so much, Representative Pruitt, Representative Foster, and House Energy Committee members, and also Representative Dan Sadler, who I understand is there as well. I am telling you, I am extremely pleased at the Alaska North Slope Propane Conference that has been taking place here in Anchorage. It is certainly one of the most comprehensive efforts to bring together the stakeholders in the propane discussion. The people that are here today come from all over the United States. They are here talking about not only the technical issues, the infrastructure that's required, transportation opportunities, the supply and sourcing, financing, distribution, equipment. And tomorrow we're going to have a really riveting discussion with Roush Clean Tech. And I don't know if you are familiar with them or not, but Roush has been very active in the NASCAR racing circuit for many decades. And what they've done is they've partnered with Ford, and they have developed a propane fuel injection system for fleet services throughout the world. And they are drawing quite a bit of attention with their fancy logoed propane fuel injected Ford 250 that's sitting outside of the University of Alaska. So many engineering students have stepped in and have been following this discussion. So huge positive. Okay, with that, I'm going to go into the presentation. And Chairman Pruitt, I don't know if you want me to stop during the presentation for questions or whatever works best for you. I'm very comfortable with, okay?
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll let you go ahead and complete your presentation. Of course, Paul's here. He'll be going through the slides as you're doing it, and we will ask for questions afterwards just to make it easier.
Okay. The first slide I'd like to start with is the propane, the pipeline route, which is the second page of the presentation. You know, we've all seen the various pipeline routes and scenarios. The two main pipeline projects, the Alaska Pipeline Project, the Denali Pipeline Project, and also the in-state bullet line, as well as several of the other proposals to bring North Slope gas to Fairbanks. But if you take that map and you look at where the pipeline routes go, you see that still so many parts of our state will never have a gas pipeline that will reach them. Enter the Alaska Propane Project, because what we're looking at here is the ability to take propane from the North Slope, as well as eventually when we have an in-state pipeline or one of the main pipeline projects going forward, and offtake propane at strategic compressor stations along the pipeline. Our intent is to develop a propane market that provides an attractive alternative to very costly diesel in so many parts of our state. The Northwest Arctic Borough was at the conference this morning, and Ingemar Mathiasen stood up and he goes, "I wanted to start the conference by letting everyone know that the price of home heating fuel in the Northwest Arctic Borough was $9.85 today." That's incredible. And if we could develop some of our resources for the in-state use and eventually to expand it to an export opportunity to serve the lower 48 and Asian markets, it would be such an incredible opportunity, jobs, industry, development, and opportunities is the way I look at it. Next slide, please. This is a map of what's been referred to as the Alaska Propane Project. This map changed significantly several years ago when the price of oil went up to $144. it was always envisioned from the get-go under the ANGDA scenario that propane would come down the main pipeline. And down that main pipeline, it would be off. You could off-take it from the compressor stations and start serving various parts of our state through the rivers and roads where they exist, et cetera. But when we hit $144 oil, what happened is this map changed, and it changed significantly, because the here-and-now solution for many of our rural villages would be to use propane for non-discretionary home heating and lighting from the North Slope today. The propane project that I am going to describe is one that could be well developed and in operation in under a two-year period. That's well before any of the pipelines that we would ever look at. And next slide, please. The benefit of utilizing propane from the North Slope is that it is an attractive, alternative clean fuel for rural Alaska. Many of the discussion points that we've been hearing this morning at the conference is that this transition to ultra-low sulfur diesel is not only costly, but it's also unattainable in many of our rural communities. It's just not possible to put in the new storage that would be necessary, and more importantly, get the supply to meet the requirements of rural Alaska. Propane has been used for decades, and it certainly is something that everyone in our state understands. The price advantage of utilizing North Slope propane is that we could look at it on a BTU value basis, and it is being priced as the North Slope being the market point rather than bringing it in from Prince Rupert, aquatraining it to Whittier, then railroading it to Fairbanks and beyond. I mean, we're cutting off a huge portion of that logistical train, and I think it offers an opportunity that is incredible. Propane extends the reach to Alaskans that, as I said before, transcends the gas pipeline route. Even when we have a pipeline of whatever form it takes within our state, we will never have gas going to so many parts of our state that critically need it beyond South Central. The opportunity that I see is world-class C3 volumes, that's propane volumes, currently produced and reinjected into the Prudhoe Bay unit. This, opportunity presents itself in not only satisfying our in-state demand, which is a small portion of that, but also opening up that opportunity for a more national and regional approach. If you look at the next slide, please. Today, there's really no market for propane from the North Slope. So what we have is the Prudhoe Bay unit operators. They have an operational target for, you know, the maximum amount that they take off of the propane to facilitate the miscible injection, which basically keeps the flow of the oil going sufficiently down the pipeline. But if you look at some of the other market opportunities, the petrochemical market of 20,000 billion cubic per day of propane could be supplied by direct marine export. This morning, the Lieutenant Governor, Meet Treadwell, spoke to us about all of his work and expertise and some of the students who have been studying the movement of the Arctic transportation corridors that are becoming more open. And, you know, he said that if you look at the reduced polar ice, the extent and the thickness of it, and you look at using this as a marine export opportunity at some point, we're right there on the North Slope with some of the richest gas streams available that could not only supply our in-state market, but have huge opportunities elsewhere. ANGDA, and this is where, you know, we have been very strategically focused. We're willing to facilitate, bring the stakeholders together, but we understand that this project, if it's going to move forward, will be a private sector project that will be driven by market and business senses of what is appropriate. And we look at us as an aggregator, as a facilitator, and as a member of the Alaska Propane Consortium group that has been meeting here these next few days here in Anchorage. But what we have been stressing throughout is that there is this point in time where this is very much a private sector opportunity, and it needs to be developed. We've been talking to the producers. We've been trying to show them how, even though this solves the in-state issues for the here and now, there's a much greater opportunity that is a very vibrant business case that could open up all sorts of potential. And I think they're starting to see that opportunity. Next slide. Now, when we have a main pipeline, if we have a main pipeline in our state, it will be about a 4.5 billion cubic feet per day. Of course, the volumes that I'm illustrating here will be greatly changed if it's a smaller diameter pipeline. But you look at that amount of barrels per day as it goes down through a pipeline, 110,250 barrels a day. That's a worldwide opportunity. Our in-state demand in the beginning has been estimated in the 3,000 to 3,500 barrels a day. So this is order of magnitude of what we could use from an in-state perspective. Next slide, please. And I'm not going to go into the various feedstocks and NGL opportunities that this slide represents, but suffice it to say that if you look at the composition of liquids that are available, it was presented back in 2004 in an Alaska right-of-way application. Those numbers haven't changed substantially today. But again, the opportunity here is incredible. Next slide, please. This is the slide that caught many people's eye at the conference. And what it says is the main takeaway here is look at the value-added industry. Look at alternative energy. Look at jobs. Look at the applications that we could have both in-state and for export with that rich stream of gas on the North Slope. And, you know, to have this opportunity, it will have to be the private sector wanting to go forward, develop, and market it. But at least bringing it to their attention is stepping us forward towards something that could be more readily developed in a business case scenario. Next slide, please. The logistics to Asia and the U.S. West Coast, I think, are important to mention. Many of the people that were at the conference today participate in the Worldwide Propane Gas Association, and they have identified the insatiable demand for propane from an Asia perspective, and also the Gas Company of Hawaii. They have been participating in the conference as well. Hawaii uses a million gallons a day of propane in just one of their islands. They import it from various different countries, and they are keenly interested in looking at partnering with another United States entity rather than bringing it in from all the Asian markets and elsewhere. Again, bringing together the stakeholders in the discussion, having the industry represented there as well so that they could see the market opportunity is what we have been trying so hard to accomplish at the Propane Conference. Next slide, please. The technical experts call it a channel-to-market issue. And what we're looking at here is what is the opportunity not only for us here in Alaska, but potentially partnering with any private sector entity that wants to develop our resources in a sustainable manner and increase the opportunity not only for us in state but elsewhere as well. Next slide, please. It all comes down to what is ANGDA's ask of the Prudhoe Bay unit owners. And the ask is very simple. We have started from a point that focused solely on the in-state market. And the in-state market, even though it is so important to us as a state, it's so important to our rural communities, the interior parts of our state, and everything else, it really doesn't rise to the level of a compelling commercial transaction for the operators on the North Slope. So what we have tried to do is say it's not only the in-state demand, which would be a huge positive and benefit for all of us, there's also this worldwide market opportunity. There's the U.S. West Coast opportunity. And there's also all sorts of petrochemical opportunities as well. Please at least consider it. And one of the things that ANGDA, you know, very much needs to continue this discussion going forward with the stakeholders is that some additional work needs to be done from a technical feasibility standpoint on what the cost estimates would be on the modification and the requirements in the central gas facility. We realize that the opportunity is there, but I believe in order to spur the private sector investment, there is a minimal investment that will be needed on technical and feasibility studies to the tune of about $300,000. And what the end outcome would be is a marketing plan from Alaska, from the state of Alaska, that brings forth what the market opportunity is in a very clear and defined manner. And it also asks the Prudhoe Bay unit to consider development of a non-unit logistical facility to receive individual owner propane sales. And what that really means is that we're asking the Prudhoe Bay unit to put in place a very rich extraction stream of the North Slope propane at a wholesale facility and make it available to an aggregator and to other users within the state. I think I can't stress enough how positive this would be. It is still possible to develop a site off and separate from the Prudhoe Bay unit. The problem with that is we're talking about a very small volume, about 2,500 barrels, and an extremely high-cost plant, upwards of $220 million for those smaller volumes. You could probably do those same changes within the central gas facility right before the propane extraction plant that exists today for a very small amount, and all of a sudden you have quantities to the tune of 20,000 barrels a day that would be available. That is the compelling business argument. Next slide, please. A very strategic study was done by Northern Economics, and the Northern Economics study was done for the Alaska Pipeline Project, and it was also done for the Denali Pipeline Project. And that study came back and said, what is the opportunity for propane once we have a natural gas pipeline within our state? So stepping aside from the North Slope opportunity that's a here and now and waiting until at some point when we have a pipeline, they said in the 0 to 5 years, there will be 3,000 barrels a day that will be the demand, not much different from what we have today. But that demand grows, changes, and expands to 30,000 barrels a day by years 10 to 15. It just shows how hungry our state would be for alternative energy at a reasonable price, the demand growth is just exponential, and I think that's very encouraging. Next slide, please. One of the things that we have been focusing on with Roush, as I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, is the opportunity for fleet services. Hundreds of truckloads of ultra-low sulfur diesel are currently trucked to the North Slope for fleet services operation, and the cost of that is extremely high. Can you imagine setting up a fueling station, utilizing our own propane on the North Slope, and be able to have a fleet that runs on that propane, no spill issues, much cleaner burning fuel, et cetera, and without trucking those quantities to the North Slope for operation? It's almost like the coal to Newcastle's discussion, except here it's diesel to the North Slope. So I think that this opportunity, as it is being explained by Roush and the technical experts that are here, is really going to start to gain some traction. We have many of the people that are in the conference are there as native corporations with fleet services management components that operate on the North Slope, and they are looking at this as an incredible opportunity. We'd also think that you could use the propane for the new development and staging facilities for exploration and drilling, transitional development from in-state and North Slope used to the longer-term export that I talked about previously, industrial applications such as electric generation. But the most important one on this slide, and I'm sorry it's not number one, it should have been number one, I didn't put them in any specific order, but I think the real opportunity here, the critical component, is the rural community and village opportunity for home heating. And providing alternatives to the $9.85 that they're paying in Kotzebue and beyond is what we are looking at and focused on and something that we could do today. Next slide, please. The propane barging, the tankering, and we're talking about what could eventually happen direct from the North Slope. If we had a propane wholesale facility on the North Slope, there's no doubt in my mind that we could truck the propane. We could look at barging it on the river communities. We could look at even direct export from the North Slope to our mining operations, to the Cook Inlet utilities, to the gas company in Hawaii, for a petrochemical manufacturing plant in state, and to the lower 48 and West Coast for seasonal demand. There are so many other worldwide applications as well. And I look at this opportunity as one that is so easily, could so easily be accomplished, but really embraces the private sector and the development of our resources in a sustainable and opportunistic manner going forward. And I think that is about all I have, and I welcome any questions.
All right. Thank you, Marianne. I believe we have one from Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chairman. Marianne, it's good to hear your dulcet tones explaining the industry you know so much about. Got a question for you about just on capacity. We had a propane pig on the farm when I grew up in Ohio, and I don't remember the capacity, but clarify for me, is propane compressible, or is it just a liquid that 30,000 barrels of propane is 30,000 barrels of liquid?
Liquid, and yes, it can be, air can be added to it, and it could be placed through a distribution system. As a matter of fact, that's used in many of the gas companies in the lower 48 as they extend their service territory. They use a propane air mixture. So there are some various applications, and I will get you the technical presentations from today, Representative Sadler, because, you know, one thing that you're spot on about is that we've been using propane for decades, and the traditional applications are there, but as some of the people from Kotzebue even testified today, they have refrigerators and freezers that run on propane in Kotzebue today.
Yeah, and actually, Representative Sadler, I've got a follow-up.
I'm just going to kind of work backwards through my slides, a couple questions. I understood you described the propane separation facility in the North Slope. You said it would be about $200 million, and you could incorporate it just above the stream from the gas treatment facility. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. That would be the unoptimized plant, the one that would produce about 2,500 barrels a day. If you were to look and have the North Slope Prudhoe Bay owners, and this ask has gone out in a letter to the owners, have them look at actually making some changes in the central gas facility itself. The cost would be much lower, and you would end up with a much higher, close to 20,000 barrels of propane a day. So what we're trying to do is reduce the overall cost and bring it back into the Prudhoe Bay unit and see if the producers and the owners would be willing to consider this as a business market opportunity. If not, we still have the backup plan that this project is viable over a period of time, and we could do it off outside the fence line of the Prudhoe Bay unit. So you're right on those numbers.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I'm sorry, maybe I'm confusing myself even. So $200 million would be a standalone to produce 2,500 barrels per day, is that correct?
That's correct. And the reason that that's so expensive is you're basically taking a full gas stream with the CO2 that needs to be removed and everything else. You're not at the optimal location on the North Slope. And what we're asking of the producers is to allow us, and the owners, allow us to work with them in developing a propane wholesale facility that would utilize the more optimized, richer stream of propane right before the propane extraction facility that exists today before it goes into the miscible injectant.
And you say it would take about a $300,000 marketing study to figure out if they could do that?
Yes, it would take about that much. And I am so convinced in some of the preliminary discussions and preliminary work that we've had done with Nana Worley Parsons and CH2M Hill and others that this opportunity is so incredible that the producers would strongly embrace it and get behind it because it would pan out.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't see anyone else. Representative Peterson, looks like he has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Marianne, I was looking at BTU values of propane are about two-thirds of the value of diesel. So
yes.
what do you project the price someone in Kotzebue would be paying for propane? They're paying $9.85 a gallon for diesel right now. So I could get an idea of how much potential savings there might be.
Well, the whole purpose of this project, and you're absolutely right, the BTU value of propane is about $91,600 per gallon, and on fuel oils about $145,000 per gallon. So you have a differential there. But when you put it on, and I have a slide that I could send to you that I've developed for the conference, and I will get that to all of you as well, it puts it on an MMBTU equivalent basis. So basically, if you're paying $2.90 for fuel oil, you would be paying $1.83 for propane under the equivalent fuel value basis that we've looked at. And I have those charts, and I could send them to you. So the premise is that they're utilizing propane already in communities such as Kotzebue because of the extremely high cost of the diesel. If we could get it sourced from the North Slope rather than bringing it in from Prince Rupert and aqua training it and going through that whole logistical train, we have the capability within our state to ensure that we develop, that we have a product that could be available at a much lower cost to many of our rural communities. It's coming right from our North Slope.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Question that I have for you, Marianna, and I've seen the propane distribution map many times being over there at the ANGDA offices.
And we do miss you, Chairman, at the energy discussions on Friday. There's definitely not as lively without your presence.
I appreciate that. One question that I have is, and I was really intrigued by the discussion that you had by the Lieutenant Governor this morning, where he mentioned the ability to take it directly from the North Slope. And I've always felt that, especially with the sea ice opening up, that we've got considerable potential up there. Can you talk to me a little bit about a little bit more about that, the feasibility there? I mean, I know we're dealing with up on the North Slope. It's not a normal deep water, tidewater situation like we have in Anchorage or even down here in Juneau. The depth of the water slowly gets deeper as you go out. I guess the kind of the question is how can we do it? Do we have any idea what kind of infrastructure would be needed to make that happen? And then I guess lastly would be to move that, is there anything special, any kind of special equipment that we need? We all see the little trucks that drive around with propane and they go fill up the the bigger tanks or the small tanks. What do we need to make the movement across water, both over the ocean and over rivers, possible?
Okay, one of the things that we had a full presentation on, and I apologize, I should have gotten you all the presentations from this conference, was a very vibrant discussion of what's called the ISO containers. And those ISO containers would be able to be stacked and placed on barges that we could use for our river communities. But if you look at the opportunity to, let's say if we were to look at going to Hawaii, they had a configuration in one of the presentations today that had a barge and had these ISO containers stacked 8 or 9 high on it. And it's currently how it's transported through to many other places throughout our continent. And the ice opening up on the North Slope presents a window of opportunity that expands from that period of time where we know we could get in and out of there. With barges, you have a lower draft that you're looking at. But I think more importantly, the technology is changing on a daily basis. We saw today the ability to have this type of truck with a crane built into it that could be loaded on a barge that would go to a village, actually could be used to off-take the ISO containers into the village, and then could actually be used once you're in the village itself to transport it to other locations. They had all sorts of new technologies that we have not seen before, and one of the gentlemen there said we need to look at ways of actually having these propane containers put on a type of sled facility that they could be used for transport during the winter when many of these rivers and streams are frozen and the communities are so isolated between each other. But sleds and snow machines are a way to transport the fuel that is so critically needed at all times.
Mr. Chairman, this is Harold Hines. Maybe I could add to Marianne's answer on the Arctic ice conditions.
Please do, Mr. Hines.
Thank you. Basically, we've been looking at the direct shipment from Prudhoe Bay through the Beaufort Sea and the ice for quite a few decades, actually. And the game changer that has occurred in the last few years is the fact that the Arctic ice cap, at its minimum extent, has withdrawn hundreds of miles from the coastline. That means when winter comes and the ice refreezes, it is what's called one-year ice. And one-year ice is very limited in thickness and, frankly, can be broken by tankers and other ships, ice-strengthened but not even ice-breakers. And the concept that we would look at here is the idea of a fairly traditional propane tanker. And tankers in this case are not the big tankers that you're used to thinking of, say, out of Valdez, but they are still sleek ships that can sail the ocean, but they are just on a different scale as a tanker. And excuse me, got a little noise going by here. The advantage is that those ships could be easily strengthened, and that with an ice strengthened ship. It is possible that you could have sort of access 8 to 9 months out of the year. As far as a port facility, as was pointed out, you would have to go out to a water depth. In this case, it might be in the range of 30 to 40 feet. There are ice-related technologies that might allow you to form a protective atoll around a port facility or a loading facility out there. There are a number of other ideas in terms of even loading facilities that represent something that is below the ice surface. And the major concern, of course, with tanker traffic, of course, in the Arctic has been the issues related to oil and the inability to pick oil up in certain types of ice conditions. Propane, on the other hand, number one, by its very nature, the tankers are inherently double-hulled because they are pressure tanks. And then secondly, of course, a propane spill is something that evaporates. It does not have the traditional contamination that people think of. So that's a little more of the detail. There's a lot to work out there, and one of the things we've tried to look at is what kind of strategic partners we might find that would be willing to take on some of those investigations in the hopes of gaining access to an incredible world-class supply on the North Slope. And my trips overseas over the last year convinced me, at least, that there are some very major, technically knowledgeable, well-moneyed companies that might be interested in partnering with us on those kind of ideas.
Great. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Possibly to Harold, but maybe to Marianne. A basic question. I know that the rural Alaska market would appreciate a lower cost per BTU fuel source, but what would be the capital transition costs to move from either fuel oil or diesel heating to butane? Pardon me, propane. Does it flow through pipelines? Do the burners still work the same for methane gas as for propane gas? What's the cost to make a transition from one fuel source to another?
The cost for that transition in rural Alaska, if you look at it for, let's use the home heating application, it would be very small. We had the discussion today on home conversion for heating, and we're talking about a price point that's well under $2,000. And if you look at that over a period of a couple of years, it's an easy payback, as you could well imagine. If you look at the transition for even appliances, they're making it work. Instant water, hot water heaters on demand, they're making it work. The conversion to propane is saving enough money that you go basically through one winter and you've recouped the differential on your cost of conversion. And we have been hearing that from people that are from the villages where they've gone ahead and they've done this. Now, when you move to an electric generator or something that takes it to the next level, I mean, there are different conversion costs. But the opportunity for small gen sets that could be used for heating and electricity and everything else are very, very compelling with incredible incentives and rebates from the federal government for this clean burning technology. And just some of those numerous pieces of equipment will be on display at our propane conference. And I think that the attractiveness and the lower cost is going to be very easily understood and embraced by our rural communities. And we just need to get that lower cost propane source rather than importing it from Prince Rupert. And today, go ahead.
Representative Settler, just to add a couple thoughts to Marianne's point to you. Number one, especially in terms of things like home heating, we had, for instance, if you heated with oil, we didn't visualize that you would necessarily rip out that heater and throw it away, that the propane heat would be in capability would be in addition to that. Because in so many of our settings, it's important to have some level of redundancies and alternatives and other things like that. And that way the consumer basically could maximize. The cost of adding another heater, for instance, for propane is fairly small compared to the annual heating bill, if I can put it that way. So adding the flexibility isn't too bad. The second thought we had is that this isn't intended to be an instant conversion of everybody in Alaska. We felt that probably the full impact might take as long as a generation to be seen in all the communities throughout Alaska. But clearly there are some of them that are in very difficult logistical situations, and that's what we're seeing in the Northwest Arctic Borough, that the motive here isn't so much price as it even just supply and logistics is driving the ability to have another clean fuel available to them.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for Marianne? All right. I appreciate it, Marianne, for your presentation. And we will now move to Ms. Paul. Thank you so much for being here today. I think you're going to talk a little bit about the logistics side of things, and we kind of touched a little bit on it, but I definitely welcome the insight that you'll bring us. So please, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Paul Foose, and last year I took a contract with ANGDIT to do a study of logistics. It started out mainly looking on the water, which is kind of my area of expertise. I worked many years in Alaska, but you find out you have to do all the other connections, rail, trucking, pipeline, production, and all those. So that's pretty much what I looked at. The other thing I think it's important for you as the Energy Committee to look at is you look at the broad range of everything. There is a high degree of uncertainty as to what's going to happen with a gas line, with a electrical generation project, the Susitna Dam, or any of these. Regardless of any development scenario, propane can be a part of this, and that's one thing that's really good about it. It fits in with any gas line project, and it also can be done in the short term if you go to the North Slope right now, or long term you can take propane off at points of a gas line wherever it goes, and I'll go through some of the logistics of that. So this is really a project worth investing in because of its long-term application to overall energy policy. So when you looked at propane production, here's some of the difference. In general, propane in the gas stream on the North Slope is about 2%. So Marianne referred to that. You have to you have to process 98% to get 2%. Well, it's not going to be that efficient. So when we looked at that, and Representative Sadler, what you were asking about on the North Slope, it comes out to about $2 a gallon. Now, if you can get to the point in the central gas processing plant where you have the highest concentration of propane, that's 35% of propane within the stream. And you can see how that vastly reduces your processing costs. You can probably get down to around 50 cents a gallon, which is a huge difference on the North Slope. So in the original contract ANGDA had, it was with one of the suppliers up there that had the full gas stream, which is 2%. Now with the central gas processing plant, it takes all three of the Prudhoe Bay operating unit operators to agree to it. So now you got three moving parts. And, you know, this is something which probably the oil companies doesn't make that much difference money-wise to them in the overall scheme of things. But to Alaska, it could really mean a lot. So, you know, in your discussions with them, it might be appropriate to just ask if they might cooperate in this endeavor, even though it's not so important to them financially because of what it could mean to Alaska. If you do get a pipeline of any kind, you can also do what's called a straddle plant that comes in over the pipeline and pulls off at any location. We looked at the Yukon River because the Yukon River is the best way to get west on the water. The Yukon River is the deepest water that we've got. You can use the larger, cost-efficient barges on the Yukon River, the deepest draft. Now at Fairbanks, where they're going to take off gas and where you have to process the gas anyway to turn it into methane for their use, you're going to pull off the propane anyway. So whether it's a bullet line or any of the other lines, a plant at Fairbanks really makes a lot of sense. And it's closer to the river systems and can also pick up, you know, points east of there, which are out by Tok and all those areas by that. You can deliver by truck. And then the last one is at Tidewater. If we get a pipeline to Tidewater, whether it's a bullet line or a main line, you'd extract propane there, and then it becomes very feasible to deliver propane by barge to the entire southern tier of Alaska, especially that part that doesn't freeze up, because what happens is you can make periodic deliveries then. You don't have to have the kind of storage that you have to have in western Alaska, where all the water freezes up, so you've got to store all the fuel you need for a full 6 or 7 months a year. So it's a lot more feasible logistics-wise for all of southeast Alaska could be very easily fueled by this. So when we look at some of the pricing issues, as I mentioned, propane is two-thirds the BTU value of diesel. So in order to be equivalent, let's say you had $4 diesel, you'd have to buy $6 worth of propane to be equivalent, because it only has two-thirds the heating value. So when you would talk about $9.80 a gallon on the North Slope, $10, that would mean that you'd probably be having to sell your propane at about $6.50 a gallon to be equivalent of that. So anything under $6.50 a gallon would be a savings to the consumer. So just think in two-thirds, you got to make up for that BTU difference. But propane is 2.5 times the BTU value of methane. So it is pretty concentrated. People are used to handling it. You know, we all use it in our camper or whatever. It's a fuel. It's well known. It doesn't require special metallurgy to carry like LNG does. LNG is minus 270, so it has to be special steel. It'll crystallize and break at that. So anyway, it's pretty easy to move. Now, if we can produce it for very cheap on the North Slope, how do we make sure that that results in savings to the consumer, that someone doesn't buy it and say, okay, I'm going to just put it 1 penny under diesel? If we do that, we really haven't, you know, done very much. So there are several distributors in the state of Alaska. It's pretty competitive right now. They take the fuel that they can get from Prince Rupert, B.C., bring it up hydro train, bring it in the train or by truck and deliver it, and then they add their distribution costs. And it's a pretty competitive market. So if you have an area that has competing distributors, that price, that lowering price is going to be reflected in that. In areas where you don't have much competition, what's happened out west now, you've seen a lot of the utilities out there, like AVEC and some of the others, come in and do group fuel purchases where they take and accumulate the demand of all those different utilities and pull it together and say, okay, now who wants to sell us 2 million gallons of fuel rather than that? So by aggregating the demand, they've been able to create a real competitive situation out there. In addition, if that fuel is distributed by a utility, then under the RCA rules, they're required to pass on all the savings to the consumer. So there might be instances where the utility itself is the distributor of fuel. There's some communities that that exists. The other thing that we found out in looking into this, and this is not something that's real well publicized, is sometimes the local distribution costs are the very highest element that's adding costs in rural Alaska. And maybe the electric co-op brings in fuel at a very reasonable price and then turns it over to the village corporation, the tribe, or the local government. And what happens for them, you know, the storage costs out there are about 50 cents to a dollar a gallon, but they're marking it up to $3 and $4 a gallon because it's their only source of income. Otherwise, the company would be bankrupt. So they're kind of in a tough situation where they have to charge a high price to their own people to be able to financially survive. So that was something that was kind of interesting to me, that I really didn't understand that part of the supply chain. In some communities, it's a tough situation of you have to, you know, get against the survival of the city or the tribe or the corporation for what they're charging locally for fuel. On potential uses for residential heating, even if we solve the electricity problem, and we've done a lot on wind power and alternative electrical energy and stuff like that, if we don't solve the home heating problem, we haven't solved the household energy cost problem. Now, in South Central Alaska, we pay about the same for home heating as we do for electricity. In Fairbanks, they pay twice as much for home heating as they do for electricity. In rural Alaska, they pay four times as much for home heating as electricity, even as high as you've heard the electricity costs. So, you know, this is where propane can really come in. If you're looking at overall household energy costs, you really have to look at the home heating. And Marianne mentioned propane is a heating fuel. They've got monitor stoves now that are computer controlled. They turn themselves up and down. It's an easy side vent out of the house. As I priced them out in my study for the heating unit and for the tank, for enough fuel it would last you for a month, is about $3,000. So if you've got this paper, this that I did, you've got it as part of your packet. If you could turn to page 5 of that, there's something that I want to show you that I think is important for your consideration as the Energy Committee. And what you'll see is the chart in the middle. And what it shows is by region of the state, where are people spending their money on energy for electricity, home heating, transportation, and then what are their overall energy costs per household average in the different regions of the state. So this gives you a picture of what it is. And the lowest is Southeast Alaska at about $5,000 a year total energy, Anchorage about $8,000, Fairbanks $9,000, and almost $12,000 a year in rural Alaska. And when you look at what percent of the annual income, of average household income, 12% in Anchorage, 8% in Southeast, 15% in Fairbanks, but over 20% of the total household income on energy alone in rural Alaska. So I just think that really highlights the need to have a comprehensive program for addressing the energy issues if the goal is to lower overall household energy costs to make it affordable for people to live, especially in rural Alaska. You have to look at the whole picture. Okay, urban residential use, even if there's a gas line. So for a lot of the areas, even around Anchorage and South Central and Kenai that have gas, there's still a lot of people that aren't served. And the reason for that is that the housing densities are low enough that it's not economically feasible to extend the distribution line. We see that out in the Mat Valley and a lot of places. So even if the gas line is built into Fairbanks, you know, I've heard it estimated that the housing, the dense part of town would pick up about 20,000 consumers in Fairbanks, but there's about 60,000 more living in the borough. Well, they're not going to be served by a gas line. So if you pulled off propane in Fairbanks, that would be the ideal fuel to send to the rest of the people in Fairbanks that live in those areas that won't be connected by a gas line. Electric utilities will be a big user of this. Now, for some of these, there's ways that you can retrofit a traditional diesel engine to burn propane without any modifications other than putting an inlet into a diesel engine. You can add 25% propane into a diesel engine. So you can hybrid the fuels to put 25% in immediately just by putting an injector into it. Now, one of the things that with electric utilities, and we talked to the Denali Commission, went and met with them, these generators are being regularly replaced as they wear out. And diesel engines have a much higher maintenance profile than a propane generator, which is basically a reciprocating engine like the old Mazdas. It's, you know, reduced friction and everything else. It's not. And so what happens is that that propane is more scalable to electric energy. One of the things we found, so we put up wind generators in a lot of the villages. Well, unless the wind is providing 100% of the energy, the diesel generator still has to run. So you haven't picked up all the efficiencies of that. Well, what we found in looking at propane generators is they're more scalable. You can run them up and down and reduce the fuel usage as your wind, you know, the electricity goes up and down. So it appears to be a much better fit for combination with wind energy to actually get the fuel savings. Now, use by the mines, there's quite a few of the mines that are looking for energy now. And it's a huge cost to them. One of the big issues, like for the Donlin Creek mine out there, one of the biggest concerns of the local people is that it would, of the 120 million gallons of diesel you'd have to bring in to run the generators there. So there's regulatory issues. There have been big problems with air quality at the Red Dog mine that the EPA has put on them. So there may be other reasons just besides price that people want to use propane, because it allows them regulatory compliance with the Clean Air Act and you know, some of the others. And when you start getting generators that large, you cross the threshold into different categories of the EPA, and then you got to start installing scrubbers and everything else. So there's other costs associated that propane could be a good use of fuel for the mines. And then lastly, transportation. There's a lot of, down south especially, the medium and smaller size trucks, service trucks, are running off of propane, and that's working quite well. So that's a possibility as a transportation fuel. So when we look at the marine transportation of it, and what we looked at, either going to the Tanana River or to the Yukon River or the Nenana River, it costs about 50 cents a gallon to truck it from the North Slope. And these are on tankers that carry about 10,000 gallons. That maxes out the Dalton Highway. There's weight restrictions on the Dalton Highway, so you can haul about 10,000 gallons at a time. So 50 cents a gallon to there. And if we just go by 100 weight, which the barge companies will quote you, it's about 64 cents a gallon to Tanana, about $1.57 to St. Mary's, quite a ways down the river. So you've got, you know, between $1 and $2 in your transportation costs. If you had to pay $2 on the North Slope for it, that'd be $4. So that's equivalent to $6 in diesel. So, you know, we're still in the range there. It'd be much better if we had a lower cost of diesel on the North Slope, but we're still in the range. Now, Marianne mentioned ISO containers. These are standard 20-foot containers. It's a post flat that has the picking gear to pick up with a regular container crane or a regular crane, and the tank is in the middle of it. So you can stack them on a barge with all other kinds of cargo. They're set up with fork slots, so you can pick them up with a forklift or a 988 loader. You can move them around. The nice thing about a 20-foot container, it's its own storage in the village. You know, it's a lot of fuel. It's about 20,000 gallons of fuel, where you don't have to have separate storage tanks, and you can switch them in and out. You can put them on a semi, you can put them on wheels and move them around. So that's a very useful. Did you want to ask a question? I'll stop. Yes.
Representative Sadler had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Paul. Is there any special HAZWOP, hazardous materials regulations about moving these small containers? of propane? Do they have to be treated as a fuel, or are they explosive, or are they combustible?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, no, there aren't any special restrictions at all on it. And even when you get down to the, which is the next one, which is a full tank barge, you know, a bulk barge, just like a bulk oil carrier, they just hook hoses up to it and can transfer it if you wanted tanks on the shore, which probably isn't a bad idea. Now, again, because of the difference in BTU value, you have to have half again as much storage. If you were to store all the propane you needed for all winter, you need half again as much storage. So, but when you put a propane tank farm in, it's much less of a cost because you don't have to put all the berms in and everything else and the liners and everything else you do for an oil tank farm. So as we looked at the overall costs, they were about equivalent to each other. And when we talked to the Denali Commission, they still have about $200 million worth of outstanding tank replacement that they need to make in the villages. And they said if we could show cost savings in propane, they could put that money towards propane tanks rather than fuel tanks, if we could show an advantage.
A follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Follow-up question I was going to ask Ms. Pease, but I'll ask you. She spoke about the 20,000 barrels per day of propane could be supplied North Slope. I don't know how much, how many gallons, how many barrels of propane one tank truck, for example, can carry. I'm just trying to get some of you the volume.
Well, 10,000 gallons per tank truck, and it's 42 gallons in a gallon of petroleum. So I suppose that's 2,500 barrels per tank truck.
Okay.
If my math is correct.
10,000 gallons.
I just did that in my head. 10,000 gallons. Divided by 42 would give you the number of barrels. I think it's 2,500.
Thanks.
Yeah, 2,500. So, and in that regard, there is a lot of propane up there. I mean, I calculated even if we had a bullet line at what's proposed at this level, we would still generate about 12,000 barrels a day, even from a bullet line of propane as a byproduct of that. So, you know, that's still a lot of propane that would serve a lot of people. I mentioned shipment from Tidewater to Southeast. This is straight up easy, you know, regular barge runs, ice-free ports, you know, tanks in the community running to utilities or for local distribution. The southern tier of Alaska is the easiest, and there's a lot of regular barge traffic. They could pull a propane barge in tandem behind them. There are just a lot of configurations that you could do. The toughest is out west. And then for direct shipments from the North Slope, that was mentioned. Now, I looked into that, and you would have to be offshore. There are facilities that can withstand that ice. The North Star Drilling Facility is one, which was built with P&D technology, open cell sheet pile technology, and that stood up quite well. You would have to pipeline underneath to it, and because you've got ice scouring, you've got to dig in fairly deep, you would have to put tankage on the North Slope to hold as much as a whole shipload. Because when they come in, for any maritime operations, you want to minimize your time at the dock. So when you come in, you want to have enough of a load on the North Slope that you would completely fill the tanker. So, you know, that would have to be worked out. But I do think the lessening of the ice opens up that opportunity, and that would be for bulk shipments to the Red Dog Mine, direct shipments into some of the regional distribution centers like Nome and Bethel, where the fuel comes in, they've got large storage capacities, then they put it on the smaller, lighter barges and take it out to the rest of the communities. That's a pretty standard distribution. Some of the technical issues, I believe I already spoke to that storage. You know, you need 50% more storage. Now, vaporization is an issue. Propane doesn't vaporize below minus 45 degrees Fahrenheit. And so in some places, it does get colder than that. So there are really two fixes for this. And one is that there's quite a bit of ethane in the gas stream. If you put ethane, which is a lighter gas, and we make an Arctic grade of propane, then it will vaporize all the time. Now, we do that with diesel. There's an Arctic grade diesel now because even diesel will coagulate at those lower temperatures. So there's a special diesel made for the colder temperatures. So you could custom make that. You can also bury the tank. And when the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cold Weather Studies Group did a study where they buried tanks. The coldest that they ever got was minus 19 degrees because you've got the insulation of the ground and the snow and everything like that. So if you had a buried tank, then that would probably overcome the issue of vaporization. So then the question of security of alternative supply. If you put the plant in the North Slope and people are dependent upon it, you know, how would we, if we had a disruption of supply there, you know, a mechanical failure or some other failure, how would you move it in? And what you would do is you'd bring in rail tank cars from Prince Rupert. And I talked to the rail barge people and Canadian National Railways, and they would just maximize the hydro train with propane tankers that carry about 30,000 gallons per each. They roll right onto the railway. You can distribute through the entire railway. So that would be your backup if you had to, if you had a disruption and had to bring fuel in and use the hydro train system and the Alaska Railroad system. And if you do it in bulk, you get pretty good rates that way. In my paper, I quote all the rates and everything that it would take to do that. And the last is training. People are handling it. I mean, you see people in the gas station. You go to, you know, have your tank filled and stuff like that. There are certain procedures that you use to make sure you don't overfill the tanks and things like that. So Tanana did a study, got a grant, and did a study of 20 people up in Fairbanks to kind of run them through handling propane. But there would be probably some additional training required to make sure that people were handling it safely, especially if they hadn't handled it in bulk before. And, Mr. Chairman, that is my report to you. You've got the rest of it with all the details in writing. But I would it looks really feasible to me. Again, the key is the access point on the North Slope to a rich stream of propane. And any help you could provide there. Marianne did mention the $300,000 for the engineering to finalize that out. And last year you did appropriate money to the Alaska Gas Development Corporation, with some of that appropriated to ANGDA. And I believe that request has been made to them to send that money over to ANGDA to do the finals on the propane, since that is also part of the charge of the Alaska Gas Development Corporation.
Great. Do you have any questions from committee members? No, I don't see any. You have one? Representative Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment that this, you know, is an exciting prospect, I think, especially in terms of, you know, not just the entire state, but rural Alaska. And certainly I'd be more interested in talking to you if you have a moment sometime just to get some more details on that. But I think it's something that you know, a lot of folks out in the bush have heard more about and would like to maybe follow up on that wherever we can. So thank you.
I'll do that, Mr. Chairman.
I agree. I think it's the potential in rural Alaska, and especially with all the various things that we hear, whether being in here or outside, there's feet behind this. There's teeth to it, I guess you'd say. And I'm excited about what we're seeing, and we really are. We need to help the people out in the rural areas out significantly. So, Representative Sadler.
I want to chime in as well. This seems to redeem the promise that we heard early on with the promises of the natural gas pipeline, that we would provide mega gas to exterior markets and to the rail belt, but that rural communities on the off river system would enjoy the benefits of propane. And to quote Hank Hill from King of the Hill, propane, is there nothing it can't do?
That's great. Representative Peterson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've actually been camping when we use propane lanterns to put light in our tents, and this was many years ago, so I'm sure the technology is probably better now than it was then. So, and this does, propane does create a value-added product for the state of Alaska, and that's something that we've always been trying to find to create jobs and increase economic development. So it has some great potential.
Yeah, I agree. We hear so often a lot of the new technology, and which is very good. We've got the new technology, but we have to have the bridge between the diesel and by the time we get to whatever that may be as we perfect it over, you know, years and decades, which some of that's going to take. And this is something we have here. It's something that's prevalent, and we already know, like Representative Peterson just said, we already know its usefulness and how we can utilize it effectively. So Very good. I appreciate your being here. Representative Foster.
I just wanted to add on that note that I, for example, in Nome, I've got a number of rentals up there, and currently propane is used at some extent in terms of, you know, the infrastructure. There's some already there, and for whether it's drying clothes or cooking and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Some people even use it for heating, and so I think making that transition, wouldn't be too tough. I mean, of course, there's the expense of switching over if you don't have it, but I think it's something that is not totally unknown to the folks out there, and so thank you.
Right. Yeah. Very. Yeah. There's definitely a comfort level. Are there any other questions for? Well, anyone, whether it's Paul, Marianne, or Mr. Hines, any questions that the committee has?
All right. Representative Pruitt, I just wanted to thank you so very much for this opportunity. Your committee members and other interested legislators have stepped in. It's a project very near and dear to my heart, and one that I think has great potential and opportunity for so many parts of our state.
Thank you so much, Marianne. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate all three of you being here. To the committee members, we will be meeting next on Tuesday, which is April 5th. We will take up HCR 10, which is resolution by Representative Peterson that relates to the waste-to-energy technology. And we will also have a presentation on interim energy efficiency policy recommendations by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. We have no further business for today, so we will adjourn at 3:16 or 4:16.